Hey, everybody. So, today we're going to be doing an interesting case, but before we start, just wanted to ask how everyone's day is. I know you're not, like, you can't just, like, talk straight back to me, but I hope your day goes well. I hope mine goes well. I hope we all have a good day. But anyway, as you're listening to this podcast, I won't listen to it. Well, I will. I don't know. You know, it just depends. But anyway, so let's get into it. Today we're going to be doing the case of Cheryl Miller and Pamela Jackson. This case is about two 17-year-old girls disappearing in 1971. Sorry for that pause. I just had to, like, think real quick. I couldn't remember. Anyway, so yeah, it's about two 17-year-olds who disappear in 1971. And here's a little bit of background on the story. So Sherry Miller and Pamela Jackson had just finished their junior year in a small town of Vermillion, South Dakota. I'm pretty close to there. I have been there quite a few times. And if y'all were wondering, that's where Mount Rushmore is. It's in South Dakota. Oh, and if you ever go to South Dakota, you should definitely go and, go to Reptile Gardens and Bear Country. Those are some of the coolest places I've ever been, ever, and they're really cool. Anyway, back on the background, so these girls are, they have just finished their junior years in a small town, and it's in Vermillion, South Dakota. Cheryl was described as tall and beautiful. She had a lot of ambitions, but had been through a lot of difficulty in her life. Her mother struggled with an addiction to alcohol, and Cheryl chose to live with her grandparents most of her life. Pamela lived on a farm about 15 miles outside of town. She was described as more outgoing than Cheryl. Pamela was very close to her parents, who were older and conservative, but loved her so much. Wow, these girls are gorgeous, actually. I'm looking at one of those, like, drawing things they would have done back then of, like, the two girls, and they're really pretty. Let's get into the disappearance of these two girls. So, on May 19th, 1971, Cheryl left her home in her grandfather's beloved 1960 Studebaker around 6:30 p.m. She told her family she was going to pick up Pam Jackson, and the two of them were going roller skating. Obviously, it doesn't happen. Pam had told her parents the same thing. But they were actually planning to go to a party hosted by the senior class near the gravel pits. The two girls didn't drink or do drugs, but they wanted to find something different to do. Okay, let's talk about this for 1 minute. Two 17-year-olds. 1971. Disappearances don't happen that much. It's a small town. Two 17-year-olds just disappear. I don't think that's how it works. Let's talk about this some more. Hold on. So, their parents aren't suspecting anything. That their 17-year-olds say they're going to go roller skating, but they're actually going to a party. Like, didn't this happen? This happens often everywhere. And I mean, okay, so I'm sorry, but this might just be, like, this day and age that, like, we are like, okay, where are you actually going? But I think back then, like, parents had more trust, and I feel like we need that a little bit more, like, a little more trust, but also it's kind of a bad thing. So, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't lie to your parents, people. Anyway, let's go on. By 4 a.m., Pam's mom noticed that the light was still on. Pam's parents would often leave the light on for Pam to turn off when she arrived home. The light was still on, and Pam was not in her bed. See, there's that trust. Like, okay, I know she's home because she turned off the light. Okay, she didn't turn off the light. She's not home. What's going on? You know, I feel like that's very trusting in one another. I feel like parents need that. Let's keep going. By 7 a.m., Rita, Cheryl's sister, said that there was a lot of chaos in the home. The phones were ringing, and both families were concerned about their children. By 3 p.m., the families tried to file a missing persons report, but were told that they had to wait until the girls had been missing 24 hours. An official missing persons investigation was officially launched on May 21st. Okay. So before we go on, which the next part will be, like, what the party, the actual party, okay? But it's kind of funny, or not funny, I shouldn't say. I feel like the missing persons report, the girls had been missing for 24 hours. You can't be missing if it's not more than 24 hours. Okay, hold on, wait a minute. You know your kid more than that cop does. Like, I don't know, I think on the cops part, or not the cops, but the, like, state in general or wherever, I don't like that rule, because if you know someone's missing, you know someone's missing, even though it hasn't been 24 hours. But, and see, teenagers back then didn't just go missing and not tell their parents anything. That's not how it worked. Now, this day and age, that kind of is how it works. So I can understand the 24-hour thing. But back then, the 24-hour thing, that just doesn't work. Okay? Okay, so let's go to the party. Before the girls left to go to the gravel pits, they had stopped at the hospital to visit Cheryl's grandmother. Good kids. Cheryl and her grandmother were very close, and Cheryl told her that she'd see her again soon. Okay, probably not true. But she thinks it's true. So, let's keep going. The police spoke to other classmates of the girls and discovered that the girls had met with three boys on the way to the party. Uh-oh. One of these boys was named Mark Logterman, who was a talking head in this episode. Who is a talking head in this episode. I said that weird. Anyway, he said that he and his two friends had stopped at a nearby church because they needed more cups. Okay, I'm sorry, you're going to a drinking party, but you go to a church to get... Okay, the church was unlocked, and there was a kitchen in the basement. While they were there, Pam and Cheryl pulled up and asked for directions. The boys then told them to follow them to the party. Mark said he remembers that both cars went up a hill, but they had missed the turn to go to the gravel pits. The boys then stopped and turned around and didn't see the girls behind them. He said he figured that the girls had seen them turn... had seen the turn and were already at the party. However, they never made it to the party or made it home. So they never made it to the party. They never made it to the party. So obviously something happened along the way. And I'm sorry, but how does that work? If you're driving a vehicle and the car behind you just goes missing. Like, and you notice it, like, right after. Like, you notice it right away. Like, no, I'm sorry, but how does this happen? Okay, we need a rewind. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, some possible theories, this is just a thing. So, the story that the boys had told the police was believable, and they were never considered to be suspects. The police went out to search for the Studebaker. The first theory was that the girls had gotten into an accident and drove into the Missouri River. They were unable to do any searches due to the currents and visibility. The police didn't find any tire tracks on the road or grass. A rumor spread that Cheryl and Pam had run away and become hippies. Rita said her sister had dreams of being a model and wanted to travel. This theory was at the top of the list for quite a while. Another rumor is that Cheryl and Pam went to California to stay with one of Cheryl's relatives. But there was no evidence that the girls had even left the town. They hadn't even cashed their paychecks. So the families believed that they didn't run away. So they're not spending money, so obviously this doesn't work. Okay, let's get into a possible suspect. The police were convinced that the girls had run away. That was until they received a tip from one of Pam's neighbors. He said he had overheard Pam talking on a party line, which is when multiple houses share the same phone line. The neighbor said he overheard Pam talking to a man named David who wanted to take pictures of her. Okay, she wants to be a model. For her, this isn't anything new, because she wants to be a model. This is normal, okay? In the model world. Okay, so let's go on, because it gets a little more interesting. The case went cold. And a guesser named Ray Hoffman used new ground penetration technology to search the gravel pits, but his search came up empty. So this case just, like, went cold. Okay, then the case went cold again until 2004, when the South Dakota State Attorney's General Office created a cold case until they then came across the 1971 report from Pam's neighbor. The search for the mysterious David led them to a man named David Lykin. David also grew up on a farm and was close in age to the two girls. Okay, this is like in 2004, and it was 1971 that the girls went disappeared, and they were 17. Oh, wow. Okay, this is 2004. Okay. In 1990, David was convicted of rape and kidnapping and was sentenced to 227 years in prison. Oh, wow, that's a lot of years. I don't think a person lives that years. Does anyone get that, why they give people such a long time of living when, like, years in prison when that's, like, not even pliable? It's not even possible? Okay, anyway. Many people who knew David were interviewed. One woman said she had seen the Studebaker on David's farm and had seen two women inside the car. One was slumped over the steering wheel and the other in the passenger seat. Okay. Oh, let's go. Okay, let's keep going. The search warrant was obtained in August 2004 on David's property. They did find women's clothing, jewelry, and a purse. However, none of it was connected to Cheryl or Pam. Okay, that's already... I mean, he got convicted of raping women, so that's... For that, that'd be normal. Okay, let's... The informant. 2 years went by, and David was still a person of interest. A cellmate of David's came forward and said that David had confessed to him that he killed the two girls. The informant agreed to wear a wire and returned a full taped confession to the police. So, David, long story short, David obviously, well, not obviously, is either doing it for attention or he did do it because he just couldn't hold the guilt in anymore. I don't know, that's kind of weird because he already, like, did some other stuff, so okay, let's keep going. This is a long story. David was charged with murder and kidnapping and was set to go on trial in March 2008. Just a few weeks before the trial began, it was discovered that the informant had fabricated the recording. He had another inmate give the confession, and the charges were dismissed. Okay. This story just got crazy. Why? Did he just want, like, a new roommate or something? Like, what does this guy hold against this David? Why would you fabricate something like that anyway? Anyway. The truth is revealed. Let's get on to it. The case went cold yet again until 2013. Oscar Jackson, Pam's dad, passed away at the age of 102, 5 days after Oscar's death. On September 23rd, 2013, a local man out fishing saw what looked like tires coming out of the water in Brule Creek. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's talk about this. Her dad just died, and he's been wondering his whole life what happened to his daughter, right? Okay, he died, and then, what was it, 4 days later? 5 days later, the car was found. Okay. I'm sorry, but I wonder if the dad was helped. I don't know. That's kind of a weird conspiracy theory. Anyway, The police were called and were able to match the visible license plate to the Studebaker belonging to Cheryl's grandfather. We're gonna keep going. There were also remains in the car, and DNA confirmed that it was the bodies of Cheryl and Pam. There was no evidence of foul play. The gear was still on. One of the tires was low, and the headlights were on. The case was ruled an accident. The police believe that they had been following the boys to the gravel pit when they lost control of the car and went into the water. It was less than a mile from where the party had been. The police returned the items found in the car to the families inside. Inside the car was Cheryl's still intact driver's license, a purse, a bobby pin, and Cheryl's watch that had stopped at 10:20 p.m. Okay, we're going to get into some final thoughts about this. But one of my things real quick. Okay, hold on. Wait a minute. Didn't they say they couldn't... There was nothing in the dirt. There were no tracks in the dirt. And... That doesn't add up. I'm sorry. I don't know. Let's get back into this in a minute, alright? I need a break. Okay, some of my final thoughts are... This case is truly... Honestly, this case is kind of heartbreaking. The girls had been right under everyone's noses for 42 years. I'm not knocking the investigators and police because they did everything they could with the technology and resources they had at the time. The girls wanted to do something different for once, and they lost their lives. My condolences go out to the families, and I hope that they are at peace now. I feel so bad for these families, and for how long that everyone had to wait to know, and if, you know that feeling when you're a kid, when, like, you're like, okay, I've been doing the same thing for, like, 10 years now, I've been doing the same thing all the time, maybe I want to do something else, and you just go try to do something else. And, well, I guess for them, that didn't work out, that's kind of sad, but, I mean, it is what it is, things happen, I mean, I believe that sometimes everything happens for a reason, and obviously this happened so I could tell you the story, but I'm not saying it's a good thing that it happened, because no one should ever have to go through that, and that should never have to happen to anyone. So, I wish y'all a good day. And, yeah. And I hope y'all do have a good day. Have a good life. You know, just try new things. But be careful whilst doing them. Overall, this case is pretty, it's an interesting case, and if you want to know more, I, found it on, kyliestruecrime.squarespace.com. So if y'all want to ever look in on this case or go figure out some more stuff, y'all can go do that, and you guys can read some more, and you guys can see the pictures of the girls, the driver's license, the picture of David, whom they thought had killed the girls. You could see the car, you could see the driver's license, the license plate, you could see everything. So if you ever want to go check that out, you go do that. But y'all have a wonderful day, and I hope you liked this episode. This is Victoria Rich signing out.